episode, I'll be focusing on the final four of the eight styles that impacted on medieval art. I like to call them the influences. I know I've spent a lot of time on these, but honestly, the footprint they left on the evolution of the medieval style in artistic design is simply breathtaking. Plus, they're all so fascinating. History and art are so joined at the hip. In part one, I covered Romanesque, Viking, Byzantine, and Gothic art. Now, in part two, I'm featuring Islamic, Celtic, Carolingian, and Ottonian art. Together, these eight styles synthesized into that sometimes ambiguous term, medieval art, art of the Middle Ages, or Dark Age art. Let's jump straight in. Hello and welcome to the Stitch Safari podcast, a sprightly and upbeat expedition into the alluringly appealing ambrosial world of stitch history, art, and embroidery. Each fortnight, we'll trek through and discover the utilitarian, the decorative, the quirky, and the just plain fun world that is the art of the needle. My name's Kathy Jack Copeland, and I'm the Stitch Safari Expedition Leader. I'm an Australian textile artist, teacher, judge, blogger, and stitch enthusiast whose work in contemporary machine stitch became my business. Now, of all the terms used to describe a style, Islamic art is the hardest to define because it's a modern concept invented by art historians in the 19th century, and it encompasses all forms of artwork produced in the Islamic world of any faith. But I'm going to stick with it because the term Islamic art simplifies and covers such a huge body of some of the world's most stunning and creative architecture and artwork. For me, Islamic art conjures images of four things: the arabesque, complex geometric tile work, calligraphy, and architecture. The art of the arabesque is so uniquely Islamic, with those beautifully sinuous, interlaced tendrils of scrolling foliage patterns, full of rhythm and movement. Its elegance can be seen replicated in artworks and textiles. Next is the beautifully complex and repetitive geometry used in some of the world's most magnificent tile work, defining the Islamic connection with the development of complicated mathematics. Along with the complicated tile work and the art of the arabesque is some of the most outstanding architecture. Think the Taj Mahal in India, the Hagia Sophia in Turkey, or the Great Mosque in Cordoba in Spain. All feature an amazing blending of cultures, styles, and religions. And that's exactly what Islamic art has accomplished over the centuries. Unlike Christian art, Islamic art is mainly non-figurative, with the artistic practice of writing and calligraphy playing a hugely important role. Not so much because the human form is forbidden, but because the development of Islamic calligraphy is so strongly tied to the Quran, reflecting the central idea of writing and the written text in Islam. The Prophet Muhammad is noted to have said, "The first thing God created was the pen." Islamic calligraphy is not simply related to religious subjects, objects, or spaces. It's diversely arrayed in a wide variety of contexts. This stunning writing, featuring a number of different styles, is based on the alphabets of lands sharing a common cultural heritage of Arabic, Persian, Indian, Pakistani, and Ottoman. The Blue Quran of the 9th or 10th century is one of the most beautiful examples of Kufic calligraphy using ink, opaque watercolour, silver and gold on blue dyed parchment. As a lover of calligraphy, I find these writings spanning the centuries some of the most delicate and exquisitely graceful markings ever made. Often used in conjunction with the intricate tilework, or simply as a standalone decorative art form. Anyone wanting to design and stitch something completely different should research Islamic calligraphy for unique inspiration. Developing from many sources, including Roman, early Christian, and Byzantine styles, the art of pre-Islamic Persia and Central Asia was brought about by various nomadic incursions, some with a strong Chinese influence. With the spread of Islamic rule in the 7th and 8th centuries, textile industries from the Byzantine and Sasanian empires evolved with a definite Islamic form of design expression. A clear connection can be seen between Islamic and European cloth, indicated through the simple use of textile terminology derived from Turkish, Arabic, and Persian, using common words such as damask, taffeta, cotton, muslin, seersucker, and mohair. The Persian word tiraz refers to medieval Islamic embroideries, usually a product of royal workshops. They were one of the most characteristic and important early Islamic textiles from the 10th to the 14th centuries, used for robes of honour for high-ranking officials or gifts for distinguished individuals. These symbolic and powerful textiles were richly embellished with bands or borders inscribed with embroidery or tapestry weaving using gold thread. Both their production and export were strictly regulated. As a prime example, the magnificent mantle of Roger II, circa 1130, with an embroidered inscription along the bottom of the regalia in Kufic script. Flowery diction, quoting Taraz tradition, bestows blessings upon the ruler using traditional motifs reserved for caliphs. Thought to be made by Muslim artisans in Sicily, the mantle shows a clear influence of a conquered power. From magical geometric tiles and patterns, sometimes containing exquisitely elegant calligraphy, to the scrolling art of the arabesque and architecture that is simply breathtaking, Islamic art is a coalescence of so many different cultures and styles. Its beauty is without peer. Now let's move on to Celtic art. Yet another difficult art to define because of its huge scope covering time, geography, and cultures. Archaeologists refer to the Celtic culture as that of the European Iron Age from around 1000 BC until a conquest by the Roman Empire. However, art historians begin to talk of Celtic art from around the 5th to the 1st centuries BC onwards. Insular art, produced in the post-Roman history of Ireland and Britain, must also be mentioned here. Originating from the Irish monastics of Celtic Christianity, beginning around 600, this approach combines Celtic and Anglo-Saxon styles, featuring that amazingly distinctive interlace decoration. Insular art's characterized by an interest in abstraction over figural ornament, linear pattern and rhythmic form over three-dimensional space and perspective. This is especially so in manuscript illumination and metalwork, demonstrating a love of colourful surfaces. Now, Viking raids affected this style. Work is thought to have been interrupted on one of the most widely known and highly decorated pieces from this style, that amazing Book of Kells. And from this point on, the style is no longer so heavily or finely decorated. Examples include the Lindisfarne Gospel, the Book of Durrow, the Tara Brooch, and the Ruthwell Cross. The Viking impact on Irish art can be seen from the 11th century when metalwork begins to imitate the Ringerike and Urnis styles. So in Celtic art, we see a preference for geometrical decoration over figurative subjects, which are often highly stylized when they do appear. A triskelon or triskel is a motif of a triple spiral exhibiting rotational symmetry and can be based on interlocking Archimedean spirals representing three bent human legs. The complexity of design and abstraction of concept is outstanding. Celtic art was typically ornamental and often involved complex symbolism. It avoided straight lines and occasionally used symmetry, while mostly steering away from imitating nature. A variety of styles and influences from other cultures can be seen in their knotwork, spirals, key patterns, letterings, zoomorphics, platforms, and human figures. As archaeologist Catherine John says, common to Celtic art over a wide chronological and geographical span is an exquisite sense of balance in the layout and development of patterns. Curvilinear forms are set out so that positive and negative filled areas and spaces form an harmonious whole. Control and restraint were exercised in the use of surface texturing and relief. Very complex curvilinear patterns were designed to cover precisely the most awkward and irregularly shaped surfaces. Now, any designer can relate to that scenario, believe me. Early Celtic style decorative work often covered functioning objects such as belt hooks, wine vessels, jewellery, beads, statuary, and tableware. Intricate and symbolic silverware followed, with treasures such as the Arda chalice and the Tara brooch. Highly sophisticated filigree work also developed along with a legendary illumination of texts. Celtic art is both stunning and memorable. Now, let's move on to the last two styles of Carolingian and Ottonian art. Both were from the Frankish Empire, spanning a period from about 780 to 1024, beginning with Carolingian art produced during the reign of Charlemagne. Now, there appears to have been a realization in Charlemagne's Carolingian court that they lacked an artistic style to match either the Byzantine Empire or that of the old Roman Empire. And as the symbolic representative of Rome, he sought to recover and reshape Roman culture and learning. But he needed an art capable of storytelling and figural representation. This art was produced for the charmed circle of the court and important monasteries under imperial patronage. A distinct drop in quality of workmanship and sophistication of design can be seen in the surviving work outside this small circle. The Frankish Empire consisted of what is now France, Germany, Austria, northern Italy, and the Netherlands, and its art was greatly influenced by the insular art of the British Isles as well as Byzantine artists resident in Carolingian centres. This was an attempt at reviving and emulating classical Mediterranean art forms and styles. And yet again, we see a fusion of elements resulting in a sumptuous, dignified style, particularly confident in representing the human figure, opening the doors to the rise of Romanesque and eventually Gothic art. The Carolingian style was built on and further developed into another revival of imperial art beginning around 950, finally becoming Ottonian art. A number of illuminated manuscripts were produced along with small-scale sculptures, but many of the manuscripts were simply copies of Byzantine models. This work did, however, develop into a distinct Carolingian style using influences from the insular art of Britain and Ireland. One of the most notable is the Drogo Sacramentary, circa 850, using oversized initials and texts of gold ink, along with the Lorsch Gospels from 778 to 820 from Charlemagne's own court school. Luxury Carolingian manuscripts were bound using ornate covers of precious metals set with jewels, usually with a central carved ivory panel. One such gem-encrusted cover is the Codex Aureus of St. Emeram, circa 870. Now, mosaics and frescoes were used in abundance on the walls of churches and palaces, along with something called spoilia, the appropriation of ancient monumental or other artworks, which were used again in new artworks. The figurative art from this period aimed to restore the third dimension, creating a more convincing illusion of space than the rather flat two-dimensional work of earlier Christian and Byzantine artists. One of the best surviving examples of Carolingian architecture is the domed octagonal Palatine Chapel, commissioned by Charlemagne himself and designed by Odo of Metz using barrel and groin vaults. This palace and chapel in Aachen, Germany, served as his seat of power and still houses his throne today. Ottonian art is named after the Ottonian dynasty, which ruled Germany and northern Italy between 919 and 1024. With a small respite, it followed the earlier style of Carolingian art brought about by Charlemagne to symbolically link the artistic achievements of the early Christian and Byzantine cultures with his own. Unlike some of the other styles we've studied, Ottonian art, along with the Carolingian art, was restricted to a few small cities, important monasteries, as well as that charmed inner court circle of the emperor and his leading vassals. The Saxon Ottonian dynasty re-established the Holy Roman Empire after the decline of the Carolingian Empire, leading to a period of intensified cultural and artistic fervour. Inspired by Carolingian and Byzantine styles, Ottonian art is largely religious, taking the form of illuminated manuscripts and metalwork made for a narrow range of patrons of the imperial court or important figures in the church. The exception is the work made especially for pilgrims. Few secular works, however, received this level of treatment. less sophisticated than the Carolingian equivalents, Ottonian art seems grand and heavy. However, the style began to change around 1000, becoming more expressive and vibrant due to the attention given to using surface patterns full of flowing lines and rich, bright colours, resulting in displaying passion and emotion. Illuminated manuscripts were the major art form of the time, with monasteries receiving direct sponsorship from emperors and bishops, enabling the best equipment and talent if available. Treasure bindings or jeweled book bindings were added to heavily illuminated manuscripts, producing a luxurious one-of-a-kind book cover. Worked in metalwork in gold or silver with jewels or ivory, in addition to the more usual bookbinding materials such as leather, velvet, or other cloth, these became masterpieces of art in their own right. Church decorations such as crosses, reliquaries, altar frontals, and treasure bindings were made of or covered by gold, embellished with gems, enamels, crystals, and cameos. Surfaces were busily decorated with gems, often raised from the surface on golden towers, accompanied by beehive projections in gold wire with figurative reliefs. This was a time when relics were assuming an increasing importance, so richly decorated reliquaries were made to hold them. The gems used were believed to have had powerful medicinal and magical properties. Examples include the Essen cross with large enamels, the cross of Otto and Matilde, and the imperial crown of the Holy Roman Empire. So, with the coalescence of these eight artistic styles, blending cultures and religions, we see medieval art being produced, reflecting this amazing fusion of ideas and traditions, leading on to innovations of their own, which we now look upon with awe and wonder. What exactly do we learn from researching these eight distinct styles? Well, for me, the most amazing and telling common factor seems to be the degree of abstraction used in their art and the level of sophistication they achieved. That's not easy. Now, abstraction was a term medieval artists neither knew nor understood. It was simply the way things were done. But it's a concept we can look upon now and categorize. They conceptualized. In other words, I believe they abstracted by using simplification to tell a story, promote to educate, to be seen, and to elevate. And I look to Viking and Celtic art with a huge amount of respect, along with the art of Islam, from architecture to panel paintings. Canvas painting wasn't invented until around the 16th century. Mosaic work, enamels, metalwork, embroidery, stained glass windows, illuminated manuscripts, and treasure bindings. This was a time of innovation in refinement and achievement, and it's no wonder revivals of their art have reignited a new passion in medieval art. It's simply stunning. In my next episode, I'm journeying into the colours and symbols used during this time. As a devotee of both, this should be a real eye-opener. So join me then, and thanks so much for taking the time to listen. I truly hope you're enjoying this peek into medieval art and embroidery. I certainly am. Bye for now.